look at Epaphroditus tonight. I had a series or a theme of looking at just different characters from the Bible. One of the themes has been trying to get shorter and shorter stories about characters from the Bible. Last week I just did one chapter out of a guy, and Epaphroditus has 6 verses. So we're getting shorter and shorter here. That wasn't an intentional purpose in this series, but I think it's kind of an interesting thing that has worked out. Epaphroditus is really what I've been going for, is stories of people that don't really have much of a story in the Bible or trying to pull things together. I really, Joseph is one of my favorite characters in the Bible, and there's 8 million sermons you can preach on Joseph, so I was trying to do all sorts of other kinds of characters. Epaphroditus doesn't have very much, and what makes his story really interesting is what it is doing in the book of Philippians. The book of Philippians, to me, is a letter about duty to God and duty to brethren. There are a lot of interpersonal issues that are going on at this church. I don't think it's anything like Corinth, where the interpersonal issues are just massive and causing real ruckus. But there is a difficulty that the Christians seem to be having with each other. Famously, at the end of it, he singles out, or doubles out, 2 ladies, and he calls them by name and says that they need to work on this. And then he really says, and the whole church needs to help them with this. And it might be a really good example of just 2 ladies that had a very small disagreement, and Paul is saying, we all need to work on this together. I don't know if it really was a huge issue. The divisiveness that was going on in the church in Corinth was a huge issue. It was affecting absolutely every aspect of the congregation. But in this letter to the church in Philippi, he is saying, to me, seemingly, a disagreement between 2 people, that needs to be fixed, and that needs to be worked on. And so that's one of the points that he's talking about in this letter. And just kind of doing a quick survey, in chapter 1, Paul is in prison, and boy, death sounds great right now because life is exhausting. But if I keep on living this exhausting life, then I get to serve you. And there's that hard press between which he's going to do. And so we see that duty to serve and to stay with the brethren and to try to help, even though he's sounds really worn out and tired. And so there's that aspect of serving others. Then in chapters 2, verses 3 and 4 are 2 of the most important verses, I think, in the whole Bible. Just reading those, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. 2 of the most important commands and expectations in the entire Bible, 2 of the most difficult commands and expectations in the whole Bible. I think thou shalt not murder has been pretty easy for me personally. But verses 3 and 4 of chapter 2 is constantly something that I have to work on. And so he brings that up and talks about how these are the things that are yours in Christ, he continues in verse 5. So he's talked about the suffering that he himself, Paul, has had. And he talks about what we need to do, and then says this is what Christ has been doing all along, and has a wonderful description of what Christ did, what Christ gave up to come down and serve other people. And then he says in verses 12 and going on, man, y'all need to work this out on your own. You need to do this. This is what you need to be doing, and this is God's work that is in you to be doing this sort of work. And then he starts bringing up a couple guys, Timothy and Epaphroditus. Man, there's no one like Timothy. I can't trust anybody. Timothy is the one I can trust who will have this genuine concern for you. And he uses Timothy to talk about some different aspects and ideas. And then he talks about Epaphroditus and the service that Epaphroditus has done. This is the 4th person, Epaphroditus is, that Paul brings up as examples for this sort of service and care and concern for others. Paul and what he has done and given up for people. Jesus and what he has done and given up 4 people. He brings up Timothy. He brings up Epaphroditus. I don't know. Paul seems a little bit high of an ideal for me. I know Christ is a really high ideal for me, but Timothy and Epaphroditus are more on the level where I think I can try to do that. They're kind of realistic for me. I need to be doing the bigger ones, but these are, I mean, in comparison to Paul, and definitely in comparison with Christ. These are the normal guys. These are the guys that I can try to be with. And so there's those examples. He then in chapter 3 talks about all the knuckleheadedness that people have about how cool they are when they're not cool, and how powerful they are, but all that power is rubbish. And all the things that Paul used to have, but it's nothing. And it's just these people who are worshiping their guts and their bellies, and we have a higher calling. And then he moves into that very practical application in chapter 4, basically saying all the stuff in chapter 3, this is what we need to do. So y'all ladies, you need to get along. And y'all rest of the church, you need to help them get along. And all of y'all, rejoice in the Lord always. Let me say that twice, right? And so that's where he's going at in this. And Epaphroditus is this powerful example. Epaphroditus, who is a nobody in the scale of what we're talking about here, okay? I think he is great, and I like him as a great nobody. We would never know about Epaphroditus if not for his use as a lesson toward these Christians. And I love finding the nobodies in the Bible. I know I'm one of the nobodies in the whole scheme of things. And so these are the people that I want to learn from. Why are they brought up? What are we supposed to learn about them? So let's just read verses 25 through 30 of chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, verses 25 through 30. I have thought it necessary to send you to you, Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need, for he has been longing for you all and has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, near to death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but also, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I am the more eager to send him, therefore, that you may rejoice at seeing him again, and that I may be less anxious. So receive him in the Lord with all joy and honor such men, for he nearly died for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was lacking in you, in your service to me. In this letter of duty to God and duty to others, he brings up Epaphroditus. And there are different things that we can learn about and think about with Epaphroditus. The first thing that, this is really minor, his name means lovely or charming. Aphrodite was a goddess of love and delight and beauty, and this was a common name, that charming or lovely is this idea. So I don't know if that meant he was a really good-looking dude, or I just think it's interesting to connect it. This is a lovely individual. His name says he's a lovely individual. And, I mean, we can't really do that unless he was named that in his 20s and 30s. Every baby is a lovely individual. But I just think that that's a fun idea. Here is someone who is a lovely person. Paul first describes him as a brother. I'm not going to talk about that. That's a very general idea, but it is a sharing that he has together. And he uses these two descriptors here. He is a fellow worker and a fellow soldier. And I think that those are good descriptions. A fellow worker means work companion, and it's used for individuals and it's used for groups. In 1 Corinthians 3, in 2 Corinthians 1, and in 3 John verse 8, he's talking about these people we are. Together, we are fellow workers. And so it's used in a general way, and then with lots and lots of individuals. In Romans, in 2 Corinthians, in Colossians, in 1 Thessalonians, and right here, also is in Philemon, it's used about individuals. In Romans 16, verse 3, Priscilla and Aquila, my helpers, those are my fellow workers. And so it's used a lot of different ways and a lot of different times, and it's a neat word. And if you jump to chapter 4, he uses it. Yes, I ask you also, true companion, that's not the word, true companion, help these women who have labored side by side with me in the gospel, with Clement, and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. And so there's this general opening. So he doesn't necessarily single Epaphroditus out as this, we don't need to capitalize the F in fellow worker. This isn't a title. This is a generic thing. But he calls him then a fellow soldier, which has the unexciting definition of fellow soldier or associate in labors and conflicts. It's used only two times in the New Testament, in this verse and in Philemon verse 2, Paul says, Apphia, our sister, and Archippus, our fellow soldier, and the church in your house. It's not used very often. It's only used these two times. Because of that, and because it is so rare, it makes me think that this carries a little bit more weight. That's not a necessity. But Epaphroditus is a common fellow worker, like so many others, but he's also a fellow soldier. And I think that that's something that's special. These are the, we looked at this in Philippians 3, and Philemon verse 2 talks about that fellow soldier word. I just think that that's interesting. In verse 30 of this passage, it says that he nearly died for the work of Christ. It talks about an illness, and that he nearly died from it, and this effort to complete what was lacking in their service. But Paul also calls him a fellow soldier. And so there's some question. Was the travel dangerous, and that's why it made him ill? Did he have appendicitis, and that's what made him ill? Or is there some aspect that Paul sees he is involved in the fight for Christ, and was that somehow connected with the illness? We just don't have the details. In the past, as I've read through this, I've always just thought he got sick on the way. There was something about that. But it really sounds like there was some aspect of going out and doing this work led to either injury or illness, and that's somehow connected with this fellow soldier status. I don't know if that's absolutely true, but it really impressed me that Paul is putting these descriptions on this guy as he is being someone who is special. And the Philippian Christians see him as your messenger and minister in my need. Now, I want to be really careful because I'm going to extrapolate more than's in the text. But this is a group where he is speaking very specifically to people not seeing each other as they need to, people having disagreements, people not looking to the interests of others. And I end up thinking, what if they were looking down their noses at this guy? He's just our minister and just our messenger. Interestingly, that is a way of showing how much higher Christ is than just angels. They're just ministers and messengers. And so it is a biblical principle to say that Jesus is better than just the angels. That's an argument in Hebrews 7, chapter 1, verses 7 and 14, which we just talked about. And so I don't know if that's what they're doing, but I think that it is pretty interesting here. Paul, maybe in conflict with their view, or maybe not, he is elevating Epaphroditus to a high position. He is someone who is more than just a servant getting a job done for people. He's a fellow worker. He is a fellow soldier. He has this high ideal in the context of this letter. Paul's work, Christ's sacrifice, Timothy who is reliable, and even your messenger as someone that these people needed to receive and honor and joy. And that says a lot about what we need to do as we look out to the people who are around us. How did Epaphroditus feel? What did he say about himself? I have to invent this statement, but based on all of his behaviors that he does for Paul in verses 25 and 26, what he suffers, how he feels about them in verses 27, and what he's going to then do, I see Epaphroditus saying things like, how does everybody else feel? What do we need to do for them? Paul says things about Epaphroditus. We can wonder, how does the Philippian church view Epaphroditus? But what does he think? What is he thinking himself? Man, they're upset. I need to help them out. Paul needs something. I need to go visit him. I need to work. And it doesn't sound like he's looking for high and important jobs either. I need to go be the powerful evangelist that's working and saving everybody. Man, church needs to send somebody out to see Paul. I'll go do it. And if I get hurt on the way, that's no problem. I think that that's a really interesting way of considering Epaphroditus and what it is he's doing. I wonder if it's going to... Yeah. And so we see in verse 15, Epaphroditus, he's working and striving with Paul, fellow, right? He's laboring for someone else there, and it doesn't matter if this is a high job or a low job, okay? And in verse 26, he's... Wow, I jumped from verse 50. It was 25, y'all. Big mistake there. In verse 25, he's laboring with Paul. In verse 26, this is one of the moments where I think it's just the Bible is very funny. He was stressed out about how they were stressed out about how he was stressed out. That's just one of the great moments of the Bible. Man, if y'all would just stop being stressed out about each other, you would stop being stressed out about each other. That kind of shows up in 2 Corinthians. There's the concern about the other's concern. It kind of goes back and forth. But this is actually wonderful. It's really, really good that everyone's stressed out about each other because it's showing this concern and longing and care. And he is upset that they are upset that his body is upset. And so he's going to go work on them. And so, but he doesn't care about how he feels. He feels badly that they feel badly. And so we can see that's the direction that he's going in. And he's doing all this. He's denying his own body. He's denying his own emotional needs or physical needs because of this spiritual work that needs to be done. There's a time when the monies that was going to be sent back to Jerusalem was called fellowship. Fellowship is the sharing that we have together. At one point, I think it's in Romans, the word fellowship is used for the thing of money they were sending. It was a fellowship. This was a spiritual work that he was doing, being a letter carrier or a money carrier. And he was doing that work for God, for God's man and for God's church. And he was doing this regardless of his body. It was always others. It was always the needs of somebody else. He was doing what God wanted him to do. He was not looking at his own interests. He was looking toward the interests of others, not considering what he wanted to do, but what other people wanted to do. And, oh, I meant to read that. I forgot that Galatians was going to pop up. It is no longer I who live. This is a tremendous idea. Verse 20 of Galatians 2 is worth your memorization efforts. A friend of mine used it as his mantra to repeat to himself when he was being tempted to sin. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. I cannot do this sin. And Epaphroditus, not dealing with temptation, but he's going out and doing this hard work because it is no longer Epaphroditus who lives. It is Christ who lives in him. And so this is the mind that we have in Christ. Remember that back in chapter 2, verse 5. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ. We are trying to fulfill the joy and comfort in verses 1 and 2 of chapter 2. That's an effort that Epaphroditus is filling in really well. He's thinking about others and what they need in verses 3 and 4 of chapter 2. And he is performing, and man, what he's doing has nothing in comparison to the great submissiveness and obedience of Christ coming down from the cross. But he's doing his version of it in his life. And the Philippian church has said, look at this guy, and he's just a letter carrier. Look at what he's doing. And that's exactly what we need to do. This is what we need to learn from. What other things can we learn from this, and what is Paul talking about this? Number one, we need to recognize the lowly. We need to recognize the grunt workers. We need to be appreciative of the things that we take for granted. And I don't know if that's what the Philippian church was doing, but I'm just going to pretend it was for the sake of this lesson, right? But it's so easy to forget about the forgetful people and to forget about the forgetful tasks. We need to care about these individuals and thank them and serve them. In Acts chapter 6, verses 2 and 3, the apostles say, man, it is not right that we should stop praying and preaching just to serve tables. Y'all need to figure out people who are going to serve the tables. So that does mean that it was more important to do prayers and teachings by the apostles than it was to serve food. But that doesn't mean that serving food was unimportant. Sure, maybe something was more important. But they needed this job done, and they needed men who would do that job. And I don't think anyone would look at those servants in Acts chapter 6 as, you know, a lower pay scale or deserving less respect than the apostles necessarily. In Matthew 10, verse 42, Jesus says, and whoever gives one of these little ones a cup of cold water in my name because he is a disciple, I say truly to you, he will by no means lose his reward. If all you are is a water boy, you're never as cool as the football team itself. Anyone on the football team is cooler than you. Jesus is saying, if you're a water boy, that's good enough. And I think that that's one of the lessons that we get here in looking at Epaphroditus and what I think Paul was trying to teach about it. Now, the specific instructions he gives, starting in verse 29, So receive him in the Lord with all joy and honor such men. Not just him, but honor such men. The word receive has this idea of giving access of oneself to another or to receive in companionship. It isn't just welcome back into the group, shake their hand when they're walking into the building. This is a heart reception. This is a connection reception. This is an act of vulnerability. This is opening yourself up to being hurt, and that's what we are called to do as Christians, not to just go get hurt. We are called on opening ourselves up to accept and to listen and to warm and welcome others into our hearts. In James chapter 1, you don't do that to the ones that look like they're going to treat you well or the ones who have a lot of money and rings on their fingers and just telling the lowly to sit at your feet. We welcome everyone. And if it's just a water boy, we need to receive such a one in the Lord, and we need to receive them with joy, which just means gladness. This is just the very simple word, gladness. But the word shows up a number of times in Philippians, in chapter 1, verse 4, and verse 25, in chapter 2, verse 2, here in 2:29, and also in 4, verse 1. And it struck me that I tried to summarize what was going on in each of those. In chapter 1, verse 4, Paul has this personal joy, and he's praying about them, and it makes them have this joy. In chapter 1, verse 25, there's this understanding that there would be this growth in their faith. In chapter 2, verse 2, the joy is the completion of what the thing that is right. And in chapter 4, verse 1, it's towards this godly thinking. And they need to receive others. There's this interconnection that we have with joy back and forth this way, as well as our joy in fulfilling our faithfulness to God. And this is just a big part of it. And it's easy to technically receive somebody and have no joy, which means you're not receiving somebody, right? It's almost like how in 1 Corinthians 11, Paul says, when you take the Lord's Supper, that's not the Lord's Supper. But we're doing it. No, that's not the Lord's Supper. When you're doing it wrong, you're not doing it. And when you're receiving wrong, you're not receiving. And so there's this joy that we need to have included with that. And then there is this honor. You need to hold such people in honor. This very specific word of honor has a prefix on it, and it's only used 5 times in the New Testament, so I included 4 of the others just as descriptions. I thought it was really interesting. Luke uses it twice, and Peter uses it twice. Now, a centurion had a servant who was sick at the point of death who was highly valued by him. That's what it means to honor such a one. When you are invited by someone at a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by them. And then in 1 Peter 2, verses 4 and 6, as you come to him, living stone rejected by men, but in the sight of God chosen and precious. Behold, I am laying in Zion a stone, a cornerstone chosen and precious, and whoever believes in him shall be put to shame. This is the way that we need to treat people, even just letter carriers and water boys, even just Epaphroditus. We need to lift them up. We need to honor them. We need to consider them special. We need to outdo each other in our effort of trying to honor others. This is just the regular honor in Romans. It doesn't have the prefix with it, but it's essentially the same word. We need to submit to one another. He's just this lower one, you might say, with an evil heart. Because once you become a Christian, you're at the top. I mean, there were apostles, and they're kind of top. And we are instructed to listen to overseers, but that's listening, right? That's not better and worse. Once we've become Christians, we're all on the same level. And that's something that we need to get into our minds, because too often our minds are worldly. On accident, we need to listen to and submit to and respect one another. We need to outdo each other in honor and lifting each other up, especially the ones that we will tend to overlook and ignore. So we're instructed to receive in honor and joy. And I think that this is the answer to what their problem was. You guys got problems? You got interpersonal problems? This is the answer. Receive one another and honor one another in joy. I've heard Christians say, well, some people at church, you know, we share interests and we have this friendship, and there's other people that I just kind of go to church with. My response to that is, yeah, natural connection and natural friendship is one thing. We are called to more than that. And so if I like five things and you don't like any of those five things, that doesn't mean that I don't have to be your friend, right? I might need to learn to like it six things or maybe seven things. I need to grow up and reach out and connect. I can't just limit those sorts of things. This room is full of honorable people that need to be revered by you. And you need to get up and get active in that. You need to look for Epaphroditus. We don't live with, well, they should like me for the five interests that I have. You know, last week we were talking about a life, this isn't a life of rights. In chapter 3, verse 20, you know, our citizenship isn't here. It's not about rights and about what I should get. I need to serve. I like this line. In chapter 3, verse 2, look out for the dogs. He gets really ugly in talking about the ugliness. There was a problem in the church, and he's addressing it. And then he says that there's a bigger problem. And I kind of wonder if what he's trying to say is, if y'all don't get these little things under control, it's going to get worse. And what he talks about in chapter 3 is just a big pile of nastiness and selfishness and pride. And we need to stand out from the world. Because the world is full of dogs. It's full of a pile of evildoers. Verse 19 of chapter 3, their end is destruction, their God is their belly. And they glory in their shame with their minds set on worthless things. That's pretty good. It's actually earthful. We're supposed to be earthless. All right, their mind is set on worthless things. And in a world full of dogs and gut worshipers, we're going to stand out. Because we're going to find people that maybe I don't naturally think of lifting up and honoring, holding, revering or connecting with. And we're going to make those efforts. And we're going to try for that. We're going to look for Epaphroditus and lift up the Epaphroditus. We're also going to work to be Epaphroditus and serve when it's detrimental to myself or serve when it's not necessarily what I'm interested or according to my own interests. Because Epaphroditus is doing the things that we need to do. When Jesus washed their feet, he said, "Do you understand what I've done?" And the answer wasn't, "Yes, you used water and cleaned filth from my feet." No, it's not, "How did I wash your feet?" It's why. What's going on when the Lord washes our feet? We have a life of serving God and serving each other. And I think Epaphroditus does a standout job at giving us a good example of that. And I'm just encouraging you... Read the life story of Epaphroditus again at some point. It'll take you a whopping 12 seconds. But think about Epaphroditus and what we can learn from him. Let's close by looking at Psalm 119 in the section that starts in verse 137. Psalm 119 starting in 137. Righteous are you, O Lord, and right are your rules. You have appointed your testimonies in righteousness and in all faithfulness. My zeal consumes me because my foes forget your words. Your promise is well tried, and your servant loves it. I am small and despised, yet I do not forget your precepts. Your righteousness is righteous forever, and your law is true. Trouble and anguish have found me out, but your commandments are my delight. Your testimonies are righteous forever. Give me understanding that I may live. In a world with troubles, in a world where we are going to suffer, we're going to have troubles and suffer. But God's word is going to see us through. And our service to God is going to see us through. And our service to each other is going to see us through. We might not get thanked as we serve one another, but it will bring its great reward. And when we seek ways to help and serve one another, even in a way that doesn't get a thanks, our hearts will improve and our hearts will be better. When you are feeling troubled and like no one is paying attention to you, the weirdest answer is start taking care of somebody else and you will feel loved anyways, even if they don't notice it. It's weird, you know. When you feel weak, lift heavy things. Magically, your arms get stronger, right? Doesn't that sound weird? When you are lonely, take care of somebody else and you will feel connection. Even if that person doesn't recognize it, you will begin to feel connection. That's the way God helps us. And so that is my encouragement to you. Ironically, when I spoke on Wednesday evening, I spoke about interpersonal stuff in a congregation. Again, it's not like I'm looking out thinking, wow, you need to hear this and you need to hear this. This is just the story of Epaphroditus that I thought was so encouraging in the context of a church that was having issues. I don't think that's not what I see here. But I do see that we need to continue to look for these servants. We got those servants. We need to look to be those servants so that we can help do what God needs done and help do what all of us need together. If you are feeling lonely, if you are feeling left out, let somebody know. Let us know. If you are being alone and you need the help of the Lord, let us know. Help. Let us know so we can pray for you and include you and get you involved and get you busy. And if you're stuck with sins, please let us know. Please reach out to God. We want to pray with you. We want to help you with that. If there's anyone who needs prayers at this time, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing?